because of the security situation, our teams on the ground are not able to operate as you know, in full optimal capacity as we usually do. And so some of these activities that will help us determine the sort of full scale of the internal displacement are not operational at the moment. But according to IOM, that's the International Organization for Migration, you know, thousands, we continue to see thousands of people fleeing Khartoum. There are reports of families arriving, you know, in different parts of the country that have been less affected, you know, in Eastern Sudan, for example, in Gedaref. But in terms of the people who are actually seeking asylum outside Sudan, the most sort of significant movements that we have seen so far are towards Chad and towards South Sudan. So in Chad, we're seeing up to 20,000 people who've recently arrived in the border with Sudan. South Sudan, it's nearly 4,000 South Sudanese refugees who are returning back to Sudan. We expect that these numbers will continue to increase as more people, you know, make their way seeking asylum in other countries. So the situation is actually quite dire, and we're doing everything that we can to help.
So were you able to identify any humanitarian corridors, for people to move? Are you in contact with the parties?
So the arrivals that we've seen in Chad and South Sudan is essentially people who've made their own way to these border areas. So, for example, in South Sudan, our teams on the ground, and majorly in Upper Nile State, where people are arriving, they tell us of people saying, you know, people have had to get on buses, for example, to travel on days to get to that location. They also tell stories of others who've been forced to go on foot because they don't have the necessary resources enough for transport. So these are people who somehow with their own resources made their way to these areas of while seeking asylum.
Okay, so you described obviously a very complex situation. And as the fighting continues, it's going to get more complex. What can be done to mitigate the challenges UNHCR is facing?
I mean, ultimately, we reiterate calls that the UN has been making from the time this crisis began, and that's an end to the fighting. I mean, that's the only way, you know, this situation will be sort of put to an end. But in the areas, in the locations where units, people are arriving in Chad, in South Sudan, units are definitely needs the resources to respond to the people who are arriving to make sure that they have the necessary assistance. Bear in mind that the new arrivals are coming into countries that themselves were already sort of handling existing large populations of refugees and internally displaced people, more often than not in severely underfunded situations. And therefore, you know, this, you know, on top of the new arrivals who are coming in seeking asylum, and UNHCR are doing all it can to help, it really is putting a strain on the very limited resources that we have on the ground. And so our call will be for obviously additional funding to ensure that we are able to quickly respond and effectively respond to people's needs, and obviously more partnership with government and other humanitarian actors, which we are grateful for, in terms of how borders have been kept open for people to move, and just the coordination and partnership we have so far with government and other partners in delivering assistance, and we hope that that will continue in the future.
On the issue of funding and resources, how's UNHCR looking? Like, do you have any new assessments? Do you have any, you know, pledges from anybody to increase funding during this emergency?
I mean, we're still monitoring the situation at this time. I know we are, you know, sort of working internally to see what's possible given the security situation in the country, to see if we'll be able to do some of these assessments that can, you know, sort of paint a picture of what really is needed. I should mention that because of the prevailing situation in Sudan, we have been sort of forced to close down or to temporarily shut down operations in, you know, some of the affected areas in Sudan. And therefore, this has curtailed our ability to continue sort of supporting those most in need. In terms of just the amount of funding that we need, again, this is still a work in progress. Our teams are on the ground and internally trying to figure out the details of, you know, what a response can look like, what exactly, you know, would be needed to ensure that everyone gets the assistance that we need, that they need. But the call remains that, you know, just a firm solidarity with the people of Sudan, refugees who now have, you know, been forced to seek asylum in some of these countries. So, you know, we just need global solidarity with these people just to ensure that we have the capacity and the ability to respond to people's needs effectively.
How do you assess the response from neighboring countries? What kind of reception have Sudanese refugees received in those countries?
We continue to remain very grateful to the governments of Chad and South Sudan because they have kept their borders open for people fleeing Sudan and seeking asylum in these countries. We know that, you know, these governments have sort of opened up their countries. And, you know, right now, for example, in Chad, we're in the process of figuring out where the new arrivals will be sheltering, either in existing refugee camps or in local communities around, you know, where these people are arriving. And maybe in the future, then there will be further discussions around, you know, a more systematic way of sheltering the new arrivals. In South Sudan, the people who are actually arriving are South Sudanese refugees. So these are people who fled South Sudan at some point and have been forced to go back because of the fighting in Sudan. And what we're seeing is that majority of them are actually opting to stay with their own relatives, with their own families. So, you know, apart from providing relief items at the border when they arrive, we're also seeing how we can support them with some kind of transport assistance to get them to their home areas. And for them that, you know, prefer to still receive assistance, we're looking at options of, you know, where we can shelter them and how we can do that effectively.
The United Nations has now repositioned itself basically in the country. How has that affected your operations in general? And especially that Sudan itself is a host country to many refugees. You said South Sudanese refugees have now returned. How has the fighting affected them? And are you still able to provide these services that you were providing?
Yeah, I mean, the fighting has had a significant impact on people in Sudan and especially on our operations as an agency. As I said, we, you know, because of the situation, we've been forced to temporarily sort of close some of our operations in the most affected areas. But we are working within ourselves to sort of see how our staff and our teams in locations that are less affected can continue to stay and provide assistance in any way that they can. We're really trying to work with so refugee communities, for example, refugee leaders. We're in constant touch with them, advising them to advise refugee communities to shelter in place, to avoid unnecessary movements, to share information as well that would be useful for either refugees or our teams on the ground so that, you know, aid can be provided efficiently. And so we're in touch with some of these sort of community networks that are available at the moment. But I must say the situation is quite dire for us to be able to respond.